actor and actresses hanging out, like what the club used to be, or the drugstore soda fountain was in, like, the 50s? He burps. Fucking Tinder, dude. My buddy Leo, he got cast off Tinder last week. But isn't it just dating and shit? I protest. I don't want this to be true. I don't want to join, and I don't want Amy to be on there Tindering around. Calvin burps. Swipe. Fuck. Book. I have no choice. I join. I swipe. And 24 hours later, I think my eyes are broken and my head is so full of faces that I worry the visual part of my brain might run out of room. There are so many girls, and they're all here. It's an infinite database, and when girls on Tinder wander into my 5-mile radius, I can see them in my phone. Now Tinder is taking over my brain, and every time I swipe, I picture Amy in a USC shirt, yawning and strolling out of my radius, and I can't stop swiping because I have to find her. I don't sleep at all for 2 fucking days. It's the most pathetic move yet, and I think California is getting to me. I call Mr. Mooney. He has no patience. I told you, he snaps. Get your goddamn dick sucked. So I try. I meet a girl named Gwen on Tinder, and it's like ordering Chinese food. In the pictures, Gwen is shiny and rested, glistening like pork fried rice. Gwen shows up, and she isn't as shiny in person. Same way the pork fried rice is always greasier than you want it to be. Her skin is puffy. She's pale. She's proof that they can't all be California girls. And she tells me about her acting class and her last bad Tinder date. She drinks red wine and looks at herself in the mirror. Her teeth stain. She sneezes. I say, God bless you. I drink vodka and search the bar for Amy. It's different being here with a woman instead of Calvin. I'm staring at people and Gwen notices. I was the same way my first month, she says. Everyone's just so much prettier here. Even the men. Naturally, while I'm at the bar with Gwen, I see the most attractive girl I've ever seen in my life, and I can't put my finger on it. She's not classically beautiful by any means, and she is hardly young. Her off-the-shoulder soft sweatshirt showcases the right amount of her boobs, like 2 scoops of ice cream, soft and creamy. Her hair is cotton candy. Her legs are caramel. When the bartender brings me the glass of water I asked for an hour ago, the candy girl and I reach for it at the same time. I'm so sorry, she says. Take it, I say. She smiles. It would be a dick move to hit on her in front of Gwen, and I am not a dick. This is why I agree to see Gwen's new apartment. She lives in a guest house by a pool in Los Feliz. It's depressing and small, and there are pictures of Madonna everywhere. Gwen humps me, and I close my eyes and picture the candy girl. We use each other. She sucks my dick. I spend the night in Gwen's guest house, and this is where it's true when the deluded aspiring actors say that the business is all about timing. The one fucking night I leave the village and fall asleep in Los Feliz, I wake to 3 texts from Calvin. Dude, girl here with Portnoy complaint. She's being weird about money, wants cash, not direct deposit. You want to buy it off her? All good. She was in a rush, so we worked it out. Got it for you. My hands are shaking, and this guest house smells like soup, and I am out of the squeaky bed, and I am looking for my shoes, and fuck, this is my fault. I lost my focus. I have to get out of here, but I can't find my fucking shoe, and I look under the bed, and it's nothing but dildos and stilettos and acting manuals. Fuck my shoes. I don't deserve them. My lift is 1 minute away, and I step out into the overbearing, in-your-face, moronic sun. And I duck my head, and here are my shoes, lined up next to Gwen's, as if she wanted the people in the big house to know about this. About us. I get into the lift, and the driver wants to know if he should take Franklin or Fountain, and he doesn't have sunglasses, and the AC is broken, and he misspells the name of my street in his GPS. The phrase one-night stand is a misnomer. There is no such thing as a one-night stand. Sometimes what you do for one night destroys your future. Chapter 11. It's not a book. It's a screenplay. White, thin, single-sided pages bound by brass tacks. Calvin rubs his eyes, stoned, sucking on a kale smoothie.
Dude, you said Portnoy's complained.
I am livid. The book.
Yeah, he says. Right viggity there.
This is a screenplay, I hiss. Who collects screenplays?
Joe, bro, don't take this the wrong way, but you need to chill. Have you ever done a juice fast?
He hits a pack of American Spirits against the desk.
You get so intense. That gets your cortisol going. Cortisol's not cool.
This is like getting pulled over for not using your blinker, and I could kill Calvin. I could kill Amy. I could kill everyone and put them in a blender and make them into a smoothie. Fast Five is on the TV, and I watch Dominic Toretto and R.I.P. Brian O'Connor assemble a team. My team fucking sucks.
Joe Bro, Calvin says. You got Tinder banged and you look all miserable and shit.
I rushed over here for the book.
Well, like, the screenplay is about the book, so, like, it's kind of the book, only in different form. Like, the way iced coffee is still coffee, even though it's cold.
I can't help it. Fuck off, Calvin, I snap.
Dude, he says. You need to chill.
Toretto never chills, because you don't get anywhere in this world by being chill, and Calvin is going on about a Flaming Lips LP, and food trucks, and Big Bear, and bacon, about how wasted he was last night. I wish I had cocaine Calvin. Pothead Calvin is impossible. A no-talent Duplass brother, smug and slow. His buds are texting. They're at some fucking market downtown, and they can bring us lunch. And Calvin still doesn't get that I don't drink vegetables or care about dope food trucks in K-Town. I care about books. I tell him I'm not hungry, and he says I need to laugh. And he gives me his iPad and commands me to watch a Killer Henderson video. I tell him I don't want to watch the video, but he says that I have to.
Henderson is on, he says. He goes off on his new girlfriend, and this dope is gold. This gold is dope. Genius.
Everyone here calls everything genius. Calvin?
Joe Bro, you need to chill, he says. Watch. Chill. Be.
But how can I be chill when Delilah is texting, clinging? And Calvin is yammering about pitching Ghost Food Truck to Comedy Central or IFC. He might get weird with it and go to Adult Swim, and he's banging the vaporizer that never works against the counter, and his ego swells, and Ghost Food Truck would actually be mellower on HBO. And maybe you could even put John Cusack in that truck, and maybe he would pick up girls and disappear and look for the girls and never find them because, like, it's a Ghost Food Truck and he's a ghost and he doesn't know it. I give in and tell Calvin it's genius, and he texts his writing partner, Slade, and I would bet my nuts that Calvin and Slade will never write Ghost Food Truck, the cartoon, the movie, or the HBO series. People in LA talk about writing, but they don't actually do it. It's the LA equivalent of going to the Cloisters or the Met in New York. You say you're gonna do it, but at the end of the day, it's Saturday, or it's too hot, or it's too cold, or you could just as easily watch TV. But then what the fuck makes me so superior? I can't even find Amy.
I'm popping next door for another kale smoothie, he says. You want?
No thanks, I say.
Joe Bro, he says. You gotta get out of your head, brother. Watch the H-Man.
Calvin, I'm pretty beat.
The video's 2 minutes.
I actually hate Henderson.
Nobody hates Henderson, he says. You crack me up, JB.
I give in again, and I watch Henderson on Fuck Narcissism. He's on his couch, in one of his trademark Laugh at Me t-shirts, hashtag boobs, talking about a girl with a dirty vag. I don't like that abbreviation. It's a pussy or it's a vagina, but it's not a vag.
He calls the girl an organic pig who smears superfruits all over his sheets, and her vag is hard to reach because of her bush. My hands start shaking, and I turn up the volume.
Blueberries, Henderson rails. I tell her to keep the blueberries in her vag and think this is a reasonable request. I get hungry, I take a bite, but these sheets, my sheets, these are high thread count sheets, people. Okay, I'm sorry to be that asshole, but I did not just get a deal from Comedy Central. I got a deal from these idiots. So these sheets are not cheap. And she's gonna make it up to me, you know, a little lovin', but then my show comes on and she wants to watch it. Do you believe this shit? So now I got blueberries, I got blue balls, and I'm my own cock block. You sit on your shitty futon, your shitty apartment, and you dream about having the girl and the sheets and the money, and then you get it, and hello, can I get laid in my own bed? Hell no! I'm my own cock block!
The crowd roars. He looks at someone in the audience. He shouts,
love you, Amy, baby. Super kisses, baby. It's all good, right?
My heart thumps and my throat closes. The camera does not pan over to Amy, and I rewind the clip and he says it again. Love you, Amy baby. She's sleeping with the enemy. My enemy. Our enemy. Vile, duplicitous cunt. And in Crimes and Misdemeanors, Mia Farrow pulls this shit on Woody Allen. They watch movies together and bond over their disgust for a television producer played by Alan Alda. Woody is smitten, sweet, noble. And in the end, Mia Farrow chooses to marry the producer. She tells Woody that he's not so bad. When I wrap my hand around Amy's cum-stained throat, she'll say the same thing about Henderson. Tell me to lighten up. In this moment, at the counter in the bookstore, having found Amy, I have to do something vile too. I have to text Calvin. This is genius. Calvin rushes back. Maybe he did a little Adderall, and he's stoked that I have seen the light and join him in worshiping at the altar of Henderson. Funnier than Richard Pryor. Smarter than Jerry Seinfeld. Did you know he didn't even go to Harvard? He never ran the Lampoon like Conan. And yet Henderson is a genius. Literally, his IQ is like 10,000. And he deadlifts, and he wrestles, and the man can do anything. Right now, he's in Malibu, surfing and Instagramming while riding waves. I could go to Malibu and drown him and smash her head against rocks, but with traffic and bus schedules, I wouldn't make it by sundown. Does he live at the beach? I ask. No, he lives up in the hills, says Calvin. He has these Friday night workouts where he fills the house with people and jams on new material. You know the way comics show up randomly? He likes to do it in his home. It's Friday. My heart might explode with Rachel Ray knives. Cool, I say. You want to go? Calvin shrugs. I don't know, Joe Bro. I'm like in the writing zone and I used to hang out with his crew. I mean, I've met him, but like I'm trying to keep it all about the writing right now, you know? Get back into the scene when my shit blows up instead of just hanging out and stuff. Oh, but Calvin, you're never blowing up because you are never finishing anything. I breathe. I reason. Well, that's great, but sometimes the thing you need is to get back in touch with people, you know? I bet if you told him about Ghost Food Truck, he would go nuts. Calvin sighs. True, but like, I feel like I'm entertained by him and I love him, but he would just not be the right producer for GFT, you know? Because there is no such thing as GFT, and I am going to move back to New York someday. I promise my brain I will, but I say this. Honestly, Calvin, you're a funny dude. Like, GFT could be a 1 hour, but picture Henderson and his people chomping at the bit for it, and then you use that ammo to go to your 1 hour places. I will sit here and tell lies all day long to get Calvin to commit to this party. Amy will be there. I need to be there. But I cannot show up alone. I cannot be that guy, and I cannot bring Harvey because the only thing creepier than a guy alone at a party is a guy with an old guy at a party.
Calvin hesitates.
I don't know the password.
I am so close. I've won him over with my compliments and there's no choice. I need that password. I need it now. I text Delilah.
Random question. Do you know the password for Henderson?
She writes back.
Jim Walsh's hooded bathrobe.
I write back. Thanks. She writes back.
Best one ever, right?
I love his passwords. Love old 90210. I don't write back. She writes more.
I might go. Are you going?
But I can't have Delilah around. After I show up with Calvin, I will slip away, some bullshit about meeting a girl, and then I will find Amy and get her alone, and I can't have Delilah following me around asking me who I'm looking for. It's vicious, it's cruel, but there's only one way to stop her from showing up at Henderson's. I write back,
actually, fuck it. Do you want to get a late dinner, 10 or 11? I want to go to Dan Tana's, yeah?
She writes back,
yes.
Calvin is playing music, going into party mode, raving about Henderson's guac, and I'm sure Delilah is in her apartment, bouncing up and down, deciding what slutty dress she's gonna wear for me tonight, not realizing that she would look much better if she covered up, if she teased me. I imagine Amy is on her knees sucking off her boyfriend, and I bet she doesn't have to do anything to get ready for their big party tonight. I bet they have maids. Chapter 12. You don't go to a party empty-handed, and my reusable pantry bag is stuffed with rope, my Rachel Ray knife, rubber gloves, plastic bags, duct tape, and Percocets from Dez. I spent all afternoon looking for pictures of Henderson's house online. Sometimes it's easier to plan the crime if you know a little bit more about the scene, but I couldn't find pictures of Henderson's house online, and I went a little crazy trying to figure out what to do. If Amy loved me, it would be different. I could make eye contact and signal for her to meet me outside, and we could whisper to each other about our regrets and our unresolved feelings. I could tell her to make an excuse and we could slip off together and drive into the mountains or the beach. Los Angeles is full of places to hide a body. But when the person inside the body doesn't love you, it's not an easy thing. Turning that breathing person into a dead one. I bought a ton of Percocets off Dez, figuring this is Hollywood. People overdose all the time. But then I realized that Henderson's in love with her, and if she passes out, he will be all over that shit and call an ambulance. So I lifted to Home Depot, where I bought random stuff. Rope and duct tape, plastic bags, cable ties, and plastic gloves. The girl at the register winked and said she's also a big fan of 50 Shades, and this is what has become of our society. Fucking and killing are the same damn thing. Now I walk outside with my bag, and Delilah texts.
Not stalking, but have fun grocery shopping, smiley face.
I ignore it, for her own good. I want her to learn to be less available. At La Poubelle, Calvin is already semi-wasted, practicing hashtags.
Which do you like better, he asks. House of Henderson or Henderson's house?
I start planting the seeds for my alibi and tell him I invited this girl from Tinder. He says, cool. And he better remember this in the event of an investigation. Calvin orders an Uber and three of his buds show up. Fuck, fuck, fuck. And we pay our tab to meet them outside. The guys all brought beer and they toss their sixers in the trunk. And they give me shit because I insist on holding my reusable pantry bag on my lap. It's too crowded and Calvin's friends are too loud and they won't let up about my fucking bag.
Pissant one. Is your makeup in there?
Pissant 2.
No, his dick is in there.
Pissant 3.
I heard about those retractable dicks. You get a lot more done every day.
Calvin.
Guys, if you give Joe Bro any more shit about his retractable dick, he's not gonna tell you where you can get one.
These guys are pale and puffy with ostentatious t-shirts under wrinkled flannel button-downs, and they hate Woody Allen, and they love Wes Anderson. They dismiss Crimes and Misdemeanors as wordy, and I think they never even watched the whole thing. I wish it were socially acceptable to brandish a knife, but the driver is an innocent bystander, and I wouldn't subject him to any additional torture. We are close, and I still don't know how I'm gonna kill Amy. Pissant 1. Americans aren't funny enough to get Parks and Rec. Pissant 2. Parks and Rec isn't American enough to get Americans. Pissant 3. I'd fuck Amy Poehler. Pissant 1. I'd Poehler Amy fuck. Calvin. Is that because she's your polar opposite? Calvin nudges me. He did too much coke.
Joe bro, come on, he says. You're the one who wanted to go so bad. Get into it. People would fucking kill to be going to this party right now.
We continue up into the hills, and this country needs a draft. These assholes should be challenged, beaten down. The Uber driver is unassuming and blank, and I wouldn't be surprised if he kills us all. People disappear in Los Angeles. This is a sad place, haunted. We are still driving up, 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 and I am not a pissant in Pumas, and these idiots won't shut up. They brand Chelsea Handler a slut and Jimmy Kimmel a sellout and Jimmy Fallon a lucky motherfucker, and they are wrong about so much in the world, and are we there yet? I don't aspire to slave away and live up here. These hills are glum and neutral even as we climb, and my ears pop and I should have come alone. I don't have a plan, and these hills aren't even the right hills, the glamorous sparkling mounds that hover above Chateau Marmont. These are the hipster hills, where lazy people in cool clothes pretend they never wanted to be gross rich, but only wanted to be comfortable, you know, chill. My phone alarm goes off because it's 10:30. I text Delilah. Some shit going down. Hang on, maybe late night drink instead of dinner. She writes back.
That's cool. Let me know. I can bring booze.
The world is too extreme with Delilah and her lack of self-respect. And Amy with her big fat ego. I will deal with one girl at a time, and I put my phone in airplane mode. We slow down. We are here. The driver says he is not available to shuttle us home later, and he gets to leave, the lucky bastard. And my throat is tight and my underwear shrunk. The dryers at Hollywood Lawns are no good, and my teeth chatter. I was starting to think I'd never get here, and now this is it. I follow the pissants into the house where Bobcat Goldthwait lived for a few weeks in the late 90s, like I give a fuck. There is a security camera by the open gate and a sign over it that reads, "Stick your tongue out at me, I'm fake." The thing about Californians is they think fearlessness is cool. There isn't a single security measure intact, which is great news for me. We cross the overgrown lawn where hipsters idle taking selfies and talking about making it to Mecca. We give the password and enter through the oversized mahogany door, motherfucker, and I smell eucalyptus and cucumbers and money. I don't see Amy. I grip my bag.
Calm down, Calvin says. Look around. Lord Henderson is the freaking honeypot.
I let him go find the guac and then slump onto a couch, and I'm annoyed that I like the couch. I haven't been anywhere nice in so long. If I had money, I would have a house just like this, and I can't believe Amy is Henderson's girlfriend. She lives here with all the fine things, and I was deluded to think that she would be holed up in a shithole with a sisterhood of competing aspirational climbers. My head spins and I get up. I will not sit on this couch, knowing that she has sucked Henderson off on this couch. I walk toward the kitchen and Calvin joins me. He still doesn't have any guac. He ran into some buds. He took something. I can feel it. He's morphing. He's pushy. He reaches for my bag. I flinch. I got it.
It's cool, he says. Everyone is putting the booze they brought in the kitchen. Henderson has a whole bar set up.
I got it. I insist. And then I realize it all might begin now, before I even have a drink or a snack, because here comes Henderson. He's shinier and leaner in person, and the smile on his face would be more at home on an action figure. Amy's not with him, but she probably approved of his fucking shirt, a yearbook picture of Louis C.K. The quote underneath reads, "Van Halen sucks," and schmuck after schmuck slobbers, "Best t-shirt ever! Dude, that is badass! Dude, that is it! Dude, Van Halen does suck!" And Henderson says, "You're welcome," like he made the joke, like he made the t-shirt, like he has a tenth of Louis C.K.'s talent. There is nothing genuine about Amy's boyfriend with his gleaming skin. It's true, when you make it in show business, you make a deal with the devil. The more pictures they take of you, the less there is inside of you. Unless you're Meryl Streep. And Henderson is a ghost. All muscle, no fat, all outside, no inside. "Get it, boy," Calvin says. "Get at this guac before it's all gone." "Dope guac," says some asshole, and I pick up a Dorito and shove it into the guac. There is nothing remarkable about this guac, about any guac, and California needs to calm the fuck down. They're just avocados. Guac is guac, and while sometimes it's slimy and disgusting, it's never delicious. I look for Amy, and I don't see her, and where is she? Don't hang-on girlfriends have to hang on to their boyfriends at times like this, when random girls are pouring into the house? A fan asks him about his girlfriend. I stop moving. "She's up north tonight with my mom," he says. Girlfriend. Up north. No. No. I didn't consider that she wouldn't be here. I try to calm down, but it's loud, and Cards Against Humanity isn't that fucking funny, and droll girls wear bold old clothes with deliberately 50s hairdos. Dear women of New York, you are superior. I go room to room looking for Amy, even though she's up north. I pour wine into a glass, and Calvin raves about Henderson. "Steve Martin retweets him every time he tweets," Calvin exults. "Like no matter what he says. How cool is that?" Henderson swoops in, scooping Skittles into his mouth full of veneers. "Pretty fucking cool, bro." "That's dope," says Calvin. "Mad dope. Hey, this is Joe. He works for me over at Counterpoint." Henderson nods, and a girl with a microphone warbles, and Henderson asks if Calvin still lives in the village. "I'm up on Beechwood," Calvin answers, fawning like a girl at a New Kids on the Block concert. "Joe's in Hollywood Lawns." Henderson looks at me. He doesn't have any pores, and his eyelashes are too long. "Birds," he says. "I fucking love that place. All those ripe drunk girls. Oh man, I used to go there the way you go to Mickey D's. Feast!" Henderson feels it, and he climbs onto a chair and then onto his marble island, and he whistles, and the room goes silent. "You guys mind if I grab this here mic and maybe work out this bit I've been hashing out on my own?" Cheer. "Yes. We love you, Henderson." And then the chanting. "Set, set, set." Henderson tells us that he's seeing someone. Cheers. He says it's going well. Cheers. He says her name is Amy. Cheers. He says Amy is out of town. Biggest cheers yet. Offers to fuck, suck, etc. Every woman in this place yells something along the lines of, "I will fuck you," and if you want to see the opposite of feminism, go to a comedian's house. He goes on. "When the cat's away, the mouse will masturbate on the sofa and RSVP no to dinner party invitations." The hooting. And I don't think a New York crowd would laugh this hard. "But the thing is, I'm happy. I'm in this. When Kate Hudson texts me to meet in the CVS parking lot for a quickie, I'm like, no, dude, go get new tits." Again, the women are laughing, and this is not right. "I'm so fucking happy that I can drive by an elementary school without feeling profoundly bitter that I never got laid once the entire time I was in elementary school." It's not funny, making fun of child molestation. Henderson doesn't understand how good he's had it. "Earlier today, I had these Japanese hookers, and I was like,
I'm so happy in my relationship that you don't need to suck my dick. Just fuck each other.
More laughter.
My girlfriend would hate me if I admitted this, so you all have to hold hands across America and promise me that you're not going to tell on me.
Calvin pledges his allegiance along with all the other followers.
I think my balls are uneven.
Girls scream out.
Your balls are sweet.
I think my dick is too big.
For a Jew? Again, there is laughter. As if a Jewish man analyzing the size of his anatomy is funny at this late stage in humanity.
So you can imagine how good it feels for me that this girl I'm dating now, God, wow, saying that, dating? Like, I can't believe that. Can you guys believe that?
He shakes his head. Fuck narcissism.
Well, okay, my girlfriend, when we're fucking, she gets really into it. And I mean, like, you guys gotta swear this is just between us. Where's the camera? Who's got a camera?
Everyone has a fucking camera, and he knew that. The arrogance of the man who gets on stage and thinks he doesn't need a punchline. He's gyrating, mocking Amy the way she yelps. He pretends to finish, and he grins. That fuckface grin, and he takes a bow.
So afterward, I'm like, no offense, but I've been fucking for a while now, and I know that I'm not very good at it. So I ask her if she's faking it.
The crowd goes, ooh, and Henderson raises his eyebrows.
And you know what she says to me?
He smiles. How awful it must be to be him, to be brimming with viciousness.
You have to understand, I have this ex. And well, let's just say I never loved him, and he was bad at sex.
The Spanish tile floor collapses into the basement, and this is the end. And my insides go quiet as Henderson shares with the world what Amy said about me. I back out of the living room and go upstairs, and I barge into his bedroom, where Amy fucks him and whispers vicious things about me. Well, fuck you, Amy. She used me, and then she used us to entertain her new boyfriend. He knows about me, so I deserve to know about him, and I search for his box of secrets. Everyone has one, and people with no imagination keep theirs under their beds. And sure enough, he has a box of shit about his ex-wife. Journal entries, newspaper clippings, pictures, ticket stubs. Her name was Margie, and she went to birds with him, sat on his lap, laughed at his bad jokes and took naked selfies on their shitty futon. They saw Billy Joel and had terrible seats. He was puffier, and once upon a time he had a heart. He got divorced when he started to get famous, when he was on the way up. Margie lives in Lake Kissimmee now and has three kids with a salesman. She doesn't look bitter.
Never loved him. Bad at sex.
He can't be happy without her, clearly, and I will put him out of his misery. Downstairs, the laughing only gets louder. Someone needs to stop him from poisoning the world. I grind up four of the Percocets and empty them into the reusable metal water bottle by his bed, right next to his bottles of Xanax and prescription sleeping pills. I take his box into his walk-in, live-in, fucking closet, and I text Calvin that I'm lifting with the Tinder girl. I text Delilah. Sorry to do this last minute, but I have to bail. I get why Calvin likes improv. There is something kind of exciting about having so little control. I didn't plan to kill Henderson, but then when you go on TV and whine about your girlfriend's bush and stand up in your home and say mean things about Kate Hudson and brag about your masturbatory habits and open up your home to strangers, the password was all over Twitter 10 minutes after we got here. Well, Henderson is going to learn the hard way that you can't go around making fun of people you've never met before. Chapter 13. It takes a long time for the party to end because most of the guests are dirt poor fanboys who need this night to stay juiced about their own flailing careers. I listen to their American Apparel conversations and the way they analyze their expressions. Even your teeth look stoked. And I wonder what will become of them all. There aren't enough mansions and jobs to go around. Hiding behind Henderson's suit is uncomfortable, and my neck hurts, and it occurs to me that I could walk out on all of this, everything, and go back to New York. But I need closure. Henderson's fucking act changed everything, and now I have to know why Amy said those terrible things about me. I can't leave this house and go on with the rest of my life wondering if I'm bad at sex. And I can't lose the chance to talk to the one person who actually knows where Amy is. There's a loud boom downstairs, and that was the remote-controlled blinds going down all over the house. There is an emptiness in the house now. The sound of Henderson pouring cereal into a bowl, watching a little recorded Seth Meyers before turning it off and locking the doors. That's a good boy. And heading upstairs. All lonely men are the same, and he's no different from Mr. Mooney as he plods up the stairs. My heart beats. I stand at attention, listening as he gets ready for bed. Fortunately, his nighttime regime only involves brushing his teeth and rubbing potions all over his precious face. I hear him walk into his bedroom, the unmistakable click of the metal bottle I spiked with Percocet, the plip-plop of the sleeping pills into his hand, the plip-plop of the Xanax, another sip of his Percocet water, and then his lights go out. He jerks off, and within minutes he is asleep. He is snoring now. I open the door. He doesn't move. Thank you, Pills. And thank you, Henderson, for being the kind of asshole who waxes his entire fucking body. I cuff his arms with cable ties, and though it's demeaning, I miss my cage where I didn't have to be reduced to this kind of thing. I pull off the covers and cuff his legs at the ankles. I cover him up with the buttery duvet, and then I slap his face. Nothing. I slap him again. Nothing. This goes on a while, until it doesn't. Until everything in the world, every last bit of it, is in his eyes. In his scream. He is the ultimate toddler, and I put on his Beats headphones and wait for him to accept his circumstances. These headphones are powerful. They do block out the noise. And I turn on his bedside iPod, Jersey Boys soundtrack, not very hipster chic of him, and wait while he thrashes, a dying shark. When he finishes fighting, I take off the headphones and I pick up his iPad. I ask for the password. He begs me, "No, no, please, no!" And I approach him with my Rachel Ray paring knife and he caves. "Margie 19. "Who's Margie?" I ask innocently. "My wife," he says. I look at him. He corrects himself. "Ex-wife." I am in his iPad, and now I need to contact his maid. "What? Why?" he protests. "Please, you tell me what you want. Anything. Anything. Just let me go." "I told you what I want," I say. "I want your maid's name." "I can wire money to you." His forehead is already slick with sweat. "I can sell this house for cash, and you can have the cash, and I can go away," he sobs. "Dude, please." He won't stop negotiating, offering me all kinds of fabulous prizes if I would just let him go. "I don't want your money," I say. "I want to know the name of your maid." He gets it. "Jennifer," he says. "She's in contact." I find Jennifer. Jennifer Maid, as opposed to Jennifer Tits, and Jennifer Big Tits, and Jennifer No Tits, and I write, "Jennifer, you have the day off. Calling in big guns for this one. Sorry for the late notice." Jennifer gets the text and responds immediately, "You're so kind." And now it's time for the real fun to begin. I tell him to stop bellyaching, and he asks me to let him go. And I tell him that's not going to happen, and he screams again. I sit down in his white modern throne of an office chair. "Tell me when she said it."
"Let me fucking go."
"Tell me when she said it."
"I don't know what you're talking about, but there's 50K in the safe."
"I'm talking about Amy.
Who?
Amy, I snap. Don't say who, like you don't know who I'm talking about. You talked about her on your show, and you talked about her tonight, so don't sit here and tell me that you don't know who Amy is. He swallows. He nods.
What do you want to know?
I want to know when you met her. His lower lip trembles.
Is this... Are you from the network?
I look at him. Could he possibly be that stupid? No, I say. I'm from the world. He cries again and he squirms and I focus on the future. I imagine the online melee that will ensue when Henderson's untimely death hits the news. Someone will leak the details about the box of pictures of his first wife, and psychologists will say that comedians are notoriously depressed. People will be stunned that Henderson killed himself at the peak of his career. I can hear the funereal battle cry cliches already. Everyone's a philosopher after a suicide. It just goes to show you money isn't everything. Maybe if he was married, things would be different. At least he didn't leave any children behind. What a shame that he didn't even have any children yet. His poor mother. And to think he just told those people how happy he was. Finally, Henderson stops moving. He breathes, sweats.
What do you want?
I told you, I say. I want to know when you met Amy.
Are you her boyfriend or something?
I said I want to know when you met Amy. He nods. There is not one single blueberry stain on the duvet, but I bet he's so rich that he has tons of duvets. These sheets are softer than the ones in Little Compton, the ones she liked so much, back when I was good enough.
I met her at Soho House,
he says. I shouldn't be surprised, but it hurts to think of her with her legs crossed at a private club, where rich people like to sit near other rich people and talk about things rich people talk about. It's the kind of place frequented by girls like Delilah and guys like Henderson. Gold diggers and deep pockets. Almost like a brothel. Less honorable. Okay, I say. And then what?
She was at the bar, and she was checking me out, and I asked her what year she was.
I dig my Rachel Ray knife into the armrest of his stupid white chair. What do you mean?
She was wearing a Peter Stark t-shirt, and I know a couple people who did that program, he says.
Who's Peter Stark? I ask. Ugh, Amy. He is smarmy even now as he raises his eyebrows.
The Peter Stark producing program at USC?
He says, as if I should know this, as if entertainment makes the world go round. I picture her the day she got here, learning about the Peter Stark program, finding a shirt, taking it.
Dude, he says, she's not worth it, okay? This is not worth 50K.
And then what happened?
I don't know, he says. Whatever happens, I bought her a dozen drinks and I got her number and then I don't know. I have a driver. I blacked out.
He's an alcoholic, and I bet he doesn't remember most of his life, but he better try. I want to know it all. Did she go home with you?
Dude, he says, this is really not cool.
Angelinos. As if not cool is the correct way to describe being tied up and interrogated. Did she go home with you?
What?
Don't act like you don't do this 5 nights a week, Henderson. I'm asking the questions, you answer the questions.
And then you'll let me go? He asks.
Yes, I say, dummy. Then I'll let you go. Say yes or no, did she go home with you? He looks at the wall.
I told you, I don't know.
Henderson, I stand. This is fucking ridiculous. It is very simple. You met her at Soho House. You asked what year she graduated. Finish the fucking story. He growls.
Okay, fuck it. Fuck it. There is no story to finish because she's not my girlfriend. I made it up.
I stare at him. You just pointed to her the other night. You said, hi, Amy. He laughs, patronizing.
It's a TV show,
he lectures.
I pointed at a plant.
People in this business, all they do is make shit up. You mean you're not with her? He sneers.
She never even wrote me back, kid. I sent her a dick pic. She must be a prude, or a lesbian, or a fucking nut job.
So why the hell are you out there telling people she's your girlfriend? He writhes.
Because that's my job! I can't go out there and talk about banging hotties every night, because sometimes they want your bits to be about relationship shit. Because on TV you make shit up.
You never slept with her? He laughs.
I told you. She's a lesbian or a prude.
I stab the chair. He's the same annoying fuck he is on the show. Not everything is made up. He whistles.
Yoo-hoo, buddy! Can we fucking move on from this shit already?
I'm sick of California with the lies and the jagged earth and the hills and the monotony. I walk into the bathroom. And no, we can't move on from this shit. It doesn't add up. Blueberries? I bolt out of the bathroom. If you didn't sleep with her, why did she say her ex was bad at sex? I demand. He heaves.
This is fucking tired.
He chomps and snorts, and he's a dog, a spoiled dog.
Okay, he says, let's break it down already. I met a chick named Amy. She said she hated my show, which obviously made my dick hard because most of the time girls are just throwing themselves at me.
This at least is good to know, he continues.
She wouldn't go home with me. She said she's not that kind of girl, but, you know, the ones that say that, they're the ones who will do just about anything a day later, right? So I got her digits and sent her a picture of my dick.
Revolting. All of it. The idea of dicks in Amy's phone. And?
And nothing, he says.
How did you know about blueberries, I ask. He laughs.
She said the best sex she ever had was with some guy, some blueberries, I don't know, bar talk. I told you. I make shit up. I turn it around. Nobody wants to hear me go off about how my lady's ex is like the shit in bed. It's called a fucking comedy routine, son. It's called comics make shit up. It's called let's get you paid.
He really thinks he's getting out of this. And I walk into the bathroom. I turn on the water. Best sex she ever had. Still, she ran away from me. From love. From all the good we shared. She would rather sit in a bar and lie to strangers than be with me. Charlotte and Charles. Bullshit. She makes Tinder banger Calvin seem like John fucking Sweetie Pie Cusack, and I get it now. I'm too good for her. Way too good for her. My hands are too good at grabbing her ass, and my dick was too appetizing to her, and she loved me so much she couldn't stand it. I check on Henderson. He's revved up again, moaning and thrashing.
Can we get the show on the road?
Hold on, I say. We're not done just yet.
Dude, he says. Go get her back. Fuck me. Fuck this.
I look through his phone, but there are so many fucking Amys in here. Amy Toronto, and Amy Chubby, and Amy Bad Nose, and Amy Tits, and Amy Ass. Who came first, I ask. Amy Tits or Amy Ass?
Dude, he says. You try meeting this many people. You have no idea what it is to be in my position.
No, I say. But I guess Amy Jim and Amy Chateau and Amy Marmont and Amy Blowjob know about positions.
Stop it, he says. Don't act like there's anyone in there that didn't want to be in there.
Even Amy Fatass?
Especially Amy Fatass, he says. Stop it, come on.
Tell me, I say, did Amy Blowjob get on her knees before or after you put her name in your phone?
I have 4 women writers on my staff, he boasts, and I only bang 2 of them.
I look at his phone. Which one did you bang? Amy Fishlips or Amy Sponsor?
That's private, he snaps. Neither. Fuck, stop it, seriously.
But there are so many more. Does Amy Sponsor 1 know about Amy Sponsor 2?
Kid,
he says, you quit now, you get paid. You fuck around, you don't. Who gives better head, Amy Sponsor 1 or Amy Sponsor 2?
That's an AA thing, he barks. I was in that for a while, and that's that.
But I guess that's not how you met Amy Grey Goose and Amy Tequila. I laugh, but he struggles.
Dude, he says, I don't lie to these girls. I'm not the bad guy. This is fucking beat, kid. You gotta stop.
Did you meet Amy Bellagio after you boarded Amy American Airlines or before?
Fuck off, he snaps. I'm serious. Cut. Stop. Enough.
Oh, come on, I say. This isn't your show, Henderson. Do you not get that by now? Frankie Valli continues to croon in the background, lecturing adolescent men about their juvenile posture. Henderson, meanwhile, screams and I search for Amy Blueberries. She lives here too, and I never felt so betrayed. My girlfriend, his phone. She looks foul here, lumped between Amy Blue Balls and Amy Bradley Whitford party. I want to kill her. I want to kill Henderson. I dial Amy Blueberries, and it brings me to a familiar recording. This phone's not in service anymore. Fucking Amy. Henderson howls, red and enraged. He wants out of his shackles. 5 seconds ago, he was talking to me about getting paid, and you really can't trust anyone here. No wonder Amy thought she'd feel at home. I search his phone for communications with Amy Blueberries. I feel like I'm going to get diseases just from looking at these texts, and I am so disgusted with him, his abuse of power. I bet Jack Nicholson never did anything like this, and I bet Paul Newman never asked women to come over, bring two other chicks, I want to watch you eat each other out. All his requests are honored. The girls come over. They bring other girls. It's all horrifying and pornographic, and he is one of America's favorite men. And this isn't Bill Clinton falling for an intern, and this isn't Hugh Grant bumbling with a tranny on Hollywood Boulevard. This is revolting. He doesn't delete any of the messages, and the girls are always writing to him, gushing about his dick. It's huge and hot, even though he ignores them once he gets into their pants. He is a loveless narcissist and only interested in the new. Just like on his show, the way he makes fun of our nostalgic fucking culture and brings on one soulless noisy band after another, all of them disposable. Then he gets home and rocks out to the Jersey Boys soundtrack and obsesses over pictures of his ex-fucking wife. It's the easiest thing I've ever done, honoring his request for water. I turn off my music. Let's get you hydrated, I say. He stops screaming. He nods.
Dude, he says, believe me, brother, I know this city makes you crazy, okay? I get it. We can work this out. You might even be onto something here, you know? And if that's what this is, if this is a pitch, we can talk about that. Fuck it. We're almost there, right?
He says this like it's a good thing, and I'm glad the water is strong and deadly. This man is no good for this world. He brings out the worst in women, and his 15 minutes have gone on too long. I pick up his metallic water bottle and pour the Percocet water into his mouth. He coughs and sputters, but he drinks. A lot. His pupils shrink, and his breath grows shallow, and his eyes roll around. I tie a plastic bag around his head. I go to the bathroom and write down the names of all of his skincare products. Everyone will remember him for his stupid fucking talk show, but I will remember him as the man who made me realize that I need to take better care of my skin. I also remember that I have to cut his cable ties. By the time I've cataloged the products in my notebook app, he's dead. I say a mourner's Kaddish. I'm not sad. Henderson got a fuck of a lot done here on Earth. Better he die now than unknowingly pass on an STD to some hopeful girl with low self-esteem, or become fat and irrelevant and begin the inevitable landslide toward the cancellation of his stupid fucking show, his deterioration into that guy who had that show. It's just basic physics. He was too high. He came down. Downstairs, the house smells like guac and beer. Somebody threw a pizza at the print of John Belushi's face. I don't know if it was intentional or accidental, but I do know that nobody bothered to clean up the mess. Assholes. All of them. But at the same time, I'm grateful that people are pigs. I glove up and gather leave-behinds, lipstick-stained cups, sweaters, a bra from the office, and bowls of M&Ms, and I take them upstairs to make a DNA sex party in the bed. We all know how many fingerprints there must be in a fucking bowl of candy, on a bottle of wine, and this will look like some classic, deviant Hollywood orgy gone awry. I seize the headphones, they are mine now, and I leave his Jersey Boys soundtrack on. Let the world know that the man didn't bring his new and cool work home with him. Let them know he had an old heart. I take two of his brand new t-shirts, tags on, then I send an empty bubble from his Twitter account. His last word is silence. His final tweet blows up, with people retweeting and favoriting it, even though it means nothing. I get it. His silence is an invitation for others to project their voices onto him. Overthinking cultural critics will elaborate on this tweet in Salon, in Slate. The man who never stopped tweeting sent an empty bubble minutes before he died. The symbolism! His tragic sex death will move the masses, and people will learn from him. And in this way, he's a lucky guy. If there's a heaven, he's probably going in spite of what he said about me. On my way out, I buy the Jersey Boys soundtrack on my iPhone. It's a long walk down the hills, and I needed this. We are built to walk, not to soul cycle and jog and hike. Walking is mental. You sharpen your thoughts and process your emotions. I didn't kill Amy, but I found her. Soho House. Of all the places, I should have known that she'd go west. She'll never stop going west, looking for someone richer, someone better. She has a disease, like an animal that can't stop roaming. But I'll stop her soon, after I shower, after I rest. I turn up Bronson, and it's so early that nobody else is up except for a couple of joggers. I debate going into the pantry, but I go there too much. It's time to mix things up. I cross the street and Hollywood Lawns is in sight. A police cruiser veers around the corner, the red and blue lights flashing. It pulls up onto the sidewalk and suddenly the cop is out of the car, pointing a gun at me. I set my reusable pantry bag on the pavement and I hoist my hands into the air. And I don't fucking know how, but I'm caught. Chapter 14. A bitter piece of shit named Officer Robin Fincher grabs the headphones off my head. He has shitty Bakersfield blonde hair, the sort better off concealed beneath a dirt bike helmet. His eyes are too close together. At some point, someone in his bloodline fucked someone he wasn't supposed to fuck, and the genes were compromised. His skin is rough, and he's bad at shaving, and the world is not fair. Even with all Henderson's products, this Fincher would still be a cretin. "Shut it and turn around," he grunts. I don't know what he wants with the headphones, and I don't know how he found me, and I don't know what he knows. But I do know that Henderson's shirts are in my bag. I'm aware of them as if they were flashing lights. "Turn around," he commands. I obey. I stand here, fucked. It's that time of day when the sun is a zombie from a 50s horror movie, slowly intensifying, creeping up on me, my exposed cheeks, my nose. My stomach clenches and my palms sweat, but I did my job up there. I left no prints, I left no mug of piss. "Officer," I say, projecting innocence, "fake it till you make it. Can you tell me what this is about?" Fincher walks toward his car, his footsteps heavy on the pavement. "This is about you being a fucking prick, so shut it and wait like I said," he calls. He didn't say this was about a murdered millionaire in Los Feliz, but he walks back over and grabs my arm, and I'm pretty sure you're not allowed to do that.
Give me your license.
I give him my license. He huffs. New York, he says.
Fucking figures.
I will not let relief appear on